too. So we'll open with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And I've asked Linda to read our Al-Anon preamble, and that will come up on the screen.
The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid to recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organizations, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic.
Thank you, Linda. And I've asked Martina to read our workshop opening.
Our first Al-Anon meeting gave many of us a feeling of hope and the realization we were not alone. Hearing such slogans as "easy does it" and "one day at a time" helped us see there had been others before us who understood what we had lived through. It was a struggle in the beginning to focus on anything except the alcohol. But gradually, as we attended more meetings and began to listen, we found it easier to break through our barrier of denial, to concentrate on what other members were saying. As more time passed, we were able to widen our focus and look at our group. We wanted to ensure that our group continued to flourish in a healthy manner. When we heard about the 12 traditions and what they meant to group unity, we came to realize that most of the time our group was practicing the traditions. Like the 12 steps, the traditions began to seem familiar. Their wisdom was applicable to our group and to our own personal lives. Some of us were in Al-Anon or Alateen for years before we ever heard about the 12 concepts of service. At this point in our recovery, many of us could think clearly most of the time, keep an open mind some of the time, and allow others to give opinions occasionally. After considering these ideas, it is but a small step further for us to wonder if the concepts play a useful part in our group's lives. The answer is yes. Whether a group is flourishing well or beset by problems, the concepts provide a vital link to the service experiences of others. Once again, we realize that we are not alone. Others have experienced similar problems and met them with understanding and compassion.
Thank you. And that's an excerpt from The Concepts, Al-Anon's Best Kept Secrets, copyright Al-Anon Family Groups Headquarters, 1986 and 2000. Next, I've asked Anne to read from on the Tradition 5, from When I Got Busy, I Got Better, pages 43 through 45. Anne, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me to read. Let's see, from the June reading, Tradition 5, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. I know an Al-Anon member who says firmly from time to time that Al-Anon is not a social club. Tradition 5 reminds me that like any sort of social club, my Al-Anon group's one purpose is to help families of alcoholics. This single clear group purpose frames all of my efforts to reach out to others. In fact, it even extends the reach of my own efforts in recovery. I practice the 12 steps not only to help myself, but also to contribute to the group purpose. In seeking recovery for myself, I also make it available to the group. Even in service, perhaps especially in service, I continue to keep my attention on weaving the 12 steps into the fabric of my life. Confusion, fear, faint-heartedness, procrastination, self-will, and dominance all yield to the gentle influence of the 12 steps in service, as in the rest of my life. I cannot contribute to the group purpose unless I continue to practice the steps with humility and faith. This practice, I believe, is the basis for being a trusted servant. To the best of my ability, I take the tools of the 12 steps with me when carrying the Al-Anon message. If I don't take care to bring my recovery with me, I cannot share it with others. When reaching out to others, I sometimes have occasion to provide encouragement and understanding to alcoholics who are not my relatives. Sometimes the understanding I need to practice is that not all members of AA realize that recovery in Al-Anon is distinct from recovery in AA. And the encouragement I need to provide is the best example of practicing this program that I can embody. Participation in Al-Anon 12-step work has provided me with many opportunities to welcome and comfort newcomers. What makes this activity easier for me is the knowledge that I have a common experience with each of these people, regardless of external differences. While shyness might hold me back on the street, our group purpose gives me encouragement to extend my sense of recovery to newcomers. The lessons of applying Tradition 5 to service have extended dramatically into other areas of my life. Just as I've learned to take care to apply the 12 steps to my group experience, I've also learned to focus on using the steps in other areas that I might have thought were beyond their reach. Business comes to mind as an example. This tradition has also helped me to focus on a common purpose with others. I've learned to work more effectively on projects with others with whom I have differences by looking for common interests and working to achieve common goals. Contributing to a group whose purpose is simple, clear, and positive has also helped me make progress in keeping other areas of my life simple, clear, and positive. Practicing these principles in Al-Anon encourages me to practice them in the rest of my life. And that's from When I Got Busy, I Got Better, pages 43 through 45. A copyright Al-Anon Family Groups Headquarters, Incorporated, 1994.
Thank you, Anne, and thank you, Martina, and thank you, Linda, for helping us open up the workshop. So each of our speakers is going to have approximately 15 minutes to speak. And if with the time left over, you'll be able to ask some questions and they'll be answering those for us. Please remember that the sharings are solely those of the individuals who are speaking and are not the opinions of Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. Okay. Let's get our first speaker going, who is going to be Winnie Q. And Winnie, I've known Winnie for a while, and when she speaks, I really want to listen. She has been involved at the group level, at the AIS level, in Alateen, at the area level, and I really respect the kind of program that she has, and I am really looking forward to what she has to say. So, Winnie, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mike. And funny enough, backstory for me and Mike, I'd been in program for a while, but I had to do some college stuff, and Mike agreed to help me out as an interim mentor while I was finding a permanent sponsor, and that's kind of how we got connected several years ago on a more than first name basis, and that was very profound to help me with my program. So I revere Mike very well, and family of choice. So I'm honored to be asked. So brief background, since not everyone here knows me, more or less for historical perspective, I got into program at age 16. I started off in Alateen and I graduated into Al-Anon. I've been in program about 14 years. So I'm almost at the halfway point, and that's kind of cool, at least for a lifestyle. As far as history of service, I've done GR and treasurer from the group level. I've done AIS in terms of serving in different service positions, as well as being co-chair. Okay, so as far as the area and Alateen level, I have been at EMEA's. Cool. That's kind of usually why it's off. I've also done service for AZAC in terms of being the Al-Anon chairperson, as well in other capacities. So it's really cool that I get to cycle through various different forms of service. There were a few guiding questions that were asked in the briefing for how to participate in the workshop. So I'm going to probably incorporate some of that information as I go. When I think about Tradition 5, about the common purpose that we have to support families of alcoholics, and we do this by practicing the 12 steps, encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. When I think about that tradition, I think about it does matter on the group level, it matters in my home life, and it does mean I practice these principles in all my affairs. Being of service has taught me that I need to ante up and I need to be passionate. If I am asked to participate, great, but part of me getting here was because I wanted people to like me and I wanted to people please. And yes, getting involved in service has helped me get to know people. That's actually how it started, was working at conventions. I got asked to help in decorations and I was thinking, oh gosh, I'm going to ruin everything. And then it turned into, it's decorating. People aren't going to know what it's supposed to be. You can just do whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it gave me permission to do whatever and have it turn out however it was supposed to turn out. But decorations kind of taught me, okay, little things can have a big impact, but they don't have to be catastrophic in terms of if there's a problem. Like the consequences are minimal, but the dividends are huge. And that was really cool. Because just a smile or a handshake for someone who's suffering in the rooms, that can just uplift them for a week. Much like, I mean, I get to cry in program. I get to laugh. I hadn't laughed in years. So little gestures that are seemingly insignificant from a healthy perspective are monumental for someone who's suffering. And that's cool to be reminded of. It humbles me out. But having a common purpose, how does that affect how I do service? If I know something is goal-oriented or solution-focused, that's going to be a fine-tuned lens or beam of how I'm going to look at the situation. If I'm focusing on the differences or the details, ultimately that's, for me, it boils down to a form of terminal uniqueness. And if I'm focusing on being right, or how I'm better than, or all those other little insequentials that I've learned really just usurp my energy and make me cranky, that is a poor use of my time and energy, because it's not solution focused. If there's a goal or an objective, AKA a common purpose, it allows me to be more open-minded and open-hearted, because even if a person has a different perspective than me, I can see where that aligns with the purpose or the goal. And I can see where, okay, maybe what I'm doing is on that same pathway, or if not, they can intersect somewhere. And that's pretty cool. So that's what I think about when I think about common purpose and how that changes how I work, particularly with others. It allows me to be humble and allows me to be open-hearted and open-minded. A simple, clear, positive purpose, as stated from our reading from the book, but when we got busy, we got better. How has that helped me share my recovery with others, whether it be meetings, newcomers, or through different forms of service? As far as program goes, for me, I think of the slogan Q-tip, quit taking it personal. It's allowed me to have a thicker skin in a sense, but also to be more like a duck and just shed off things. So the water just rolls off. If I have a simple and clear and positive perspective, it's almost like a safe haven where there's not as much negativity permeating, so I'm not going to get hit by shrapnel. But I'm also going to be less inclined to have trigger happy buttons. I'm not going to have as much of an ego at stake. It's also about my conduct, because the step work allows me to see what I do and how I do that with others. So it ensures that I keep my side of the street clean, both mentally and emotionally, not just spiritually and physically. How I interact outside of program with that, though, with a simple, clear, and positive purpose, extrapolating that to say with family or to with work or other things, it allows me to have a higher level of interpersonal skills and professionalism. And again, it keeps it clean, but it keeps me wanting to strive for that echelon of behavior, because one, I feel more esteem when I do that, but two, I think it's a more courteous manner of being. And that's where I want to be. I want to be at that level of being loving in my actions. Another one that was posed as a question was the spiritual aspects of program factored into my recovery and how I participate. Realistically, the steps are how I interact with God or my higher power, as well as how I talk to myself and interact with myself. The traditions allow me to better work with and relate with other people. And then the concepts, because I'm working through those with my sponsor at the moment. First time going through those, it's great. But for the most part, when I hear the concepts, it allows me to interweave the other two legacies with the bigger picture of how our program operates outside of our state, along with how to incorporate those legacies with my affairs at large, because there's such a perspective beyond what I am and beyond where I go. There's such a bigger picture that I'll never know, but I don't want to be ignorant of it, but I want to also have a perspective about it. In a more tangible sense, the better I'm able to interact with my higher power, the more grounded and healthier I feel in my own skin. When I'm better in my own skin, I tend to be better dealing with other people. And when I'm better dealing with other people, the bigger picture makes sense for why I'm doing what I'm doing with other people. So I guess it's more or less perspective on that. It's okay, this is the cell, these are the organ systems, this is the whole organism, but I'm really a liver cell, so I'm just going to help filter blood. That's kind of how I see it. It's like, yep, I'm in Arizona, I'm doing stuff in a dry state, but that doesn't mean there's not other stuff going on that impacts it. We're not just isolated, we're a whole space. Share things. All that being said, it allows me a better ability to be more open and be more vulnerable, to try to be more receptive, and to also try to learn how to give better, which ultimately I think helps to minimize my ego and I hope increase my humility. One of the other questions that was good fuel for thought was, what situations do I forget to bring the tools of recovery with me? And I have a litany right now, because it has been an interesting time working program. And it's been an interesting time getting to know myself through a lot of the stuff that's been going on the last year and a half. One of the things that got me into program was my anger. I should actually say my wrath. I had a very prominent anger problem when I got here. And I hadn't had to revisit that in a long time. And boy, did I have to revisit it in the last year. Which is good. Highly uncomfortable. But very good. It got me back to the basics, which I think of HALT when I think of that. You know, am I hungry? Am I angry? Am I lonely? Am I tired? Are there other trigger points that I'm not really paying attention to? And I'm not going to bring the tools of recovery if I have a need that I'm not meeting. And ultimately, it is me that needs to meet that need. There's also ruts ruts and relapses where I'll get triggered by a memory and another person's actions are kind of what spurred that on, but that's still my memory and those are my feelings. I can't take that out on the other person. I have enough program to know that, but I sometimes forget beyond that of, oh, how do I do that without looking at them and glaring harsh? So those things, they come up. And, you know, gratefully, I've got a sponsor. Oh, wow, I can call them. When they're not available, I've got extra friends and program. There's also a litany of literature. I tend to gravitate towards Courage to Change as a daily reader, but there's particularly one reading in Hope for Today that I've spent months on when I really need a crutch of support, and it's a reading about serenity. And I believe it's on Christmas Day in Hope for Today. And, you know, it talks about all the things that serenity is, and it ends with the Serenity Prayer. And I've had certain hurts where I have read that for 3 months straight, and it's just been so helpful. Ultimately, I think about the adage about acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. If I am fighting, if I am resisting, if I am acting like a 2-year-old on a temper tantrum spree, I'm really not accepting stuff that's going on. And that tells me a lot about whether I'm willing or not, particularly to change and to adapt. I also think of what my sponsor usually tells me, which is let go or be dragged. And do I want to control? Do I want my way? Am I right? And am I fighting because I know I'm right? Or do I want to be happy? And is there more than one way to do something? And when I really get into a clear space, there's one ultimate authority, a loving higher power, but there's many ways to get there. And there's many ways to interact and cooperate with that and with others. All that to say, I learned that I had needs I didn't know I needed. But if I've got a need that's not met, I'm not using my recovery because I'm grappling to survive something that I think I need. And when I'm in a space where I'm clear and I'm loved and my needs are met, I usually have no problem engaging with my tools of recovery. Summary of my participation in service, the more I keep up an involvement that's genuine and not obligatory, where I'm not doing it out of guilt or shame, I'm doing it out of a genuine love and an overflowing, the more that I walk in it, the more that I feel solidified in my mind and heart and my habits. Thanks, Mike. The principles get into me. They don't necessarily just seem like lip service or a weird thing. The more that it's obligatory, the more I feel like it's draining because I'm doing a lot and I'm not taking care of myself. That's usually when it's agonizing and groaning and, what a chore. But if I'm well balanced with my step work, because ultimately that helps me figure out my needs and get right with myself, then I can get right with others. Service is a joy because I get to interact with people I wouldn't normally meet. I get to find perspectives and situations that, funny enough, help me down the pike. Because, quick adage for the last couple minutes to illustrate that point. So I did alternate chair for a while. I get to serve in AIS for 3 years in any one position. I only served in that one for one because career stuff was happening. But I'll tell you what, that 1 year of doing that position really groomed me well for what came down the pike. And I had to deal with certain stuff. And it's like, oh, I already had the training wheels for this. This is great. Likewise with dealing with teenagers as an EMEAS. Man, I'm getting dividends off of that experience from 7 years ago because I work with a lot of teenagers now and I have an easier time with them than mostly my other colleagues because I had to deal with how do I interact with teenagers in a meaningful way and all that drive. It's cool that service work actually usually benefits me also in the rest of my life. So with that, I wrap up and thank you for letting me be here.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Winnie. That was great. Let's give Winnie a nice round of applause, jazz hands. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Next, our next speaker is Cindy M. I would take up the entire 15 minutes talking about Cindy M's service qualifications. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to let her do that. But she has just been a great help personally in my program, in my service work. And I am really looking forward to, Cindy, what you have to say tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for asking me to share. First thing I'm going to do is take myself off of video here, looking at myself. I don't want to look at myself. I want to see others. So, good evening. My name is Cindy M. I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon, which includes Alateen, which is where I met Winnie. And I'm grateful. You know, Mary Jane's going to be coming on after me, and I met Mary Jane through service at AIS. So my home group is the Northwest Saturday Early Risers in Tucson. And I just want to share, I'm going to share a little bit about my, I'll tell you the short version of my story before we get on to our topic of new perspectives on reaching out, Tradition 5. So the short version, I married an alcoholic. I tried to change and control him. I ended up finding Al-Anon when he went into a rehab center. And after redefining my higher power, with the help of that new higher power and a sponsor, I started working the steps. I worked the steps and the traditions and the concepts of service over many years. I didn't do them all that quickly. It took me, in fact, one time when I got a new sponsor and started the steps over, I stayed on step one for about 3 years. That was when my son became the alcoholic in my life. But by studying our three legacies, I've gained a new perspective on my life, and it's a positive one. I was very negative when I got here. So today I try to look for the positive in all. Tradition five states that we have one purpose, to help families of alcoholics, period. That's all. It goes on to explain three ways to fulfill that purpose, you know, work the steps, encourage and understand our alcoholic relatives. And the third way is to welcome and give comfort to families of alcoholics. So therefore, I've come to believe that I have one purpose. And what is that purpose? To help others by reaching out. I no longer find that it's about me, even though I have changed me through working the steps. And hopefully I have something to carry now instead of a mess, which is what I came with. By working the traditions, I learned how to play nicely with others in the sandbox, and the 12 concepts of service have provided spiritual principles to help me help others through being of service or reaching out in line with our topic tonight. So to anyone who might be new to the program, welcome. Please keep coming back. And as it was said to me, please don't leave before your miracle occurs. Now, the alcoholic that brought me to Al-Anon was in and out of sobriety. We eventually divorced, and he eventually took his own life. However, I stayed in Al-Anon for me. You know, I am my own qualifier. I don't need an alcoholic to be here. So being of service has gotten me out of myself. It's given me a purpose, and it's provided lots of opportunities for growth. I love this program, and I wanted to be here for those people that have not found us yet, whether they're in my family, your family, or any family out there. You know, this is the driving force behind what I do, by being willing to give my money, my time, and my talents to this program. So the questions that we were asked to reflect on, the first one was, how has having a common purpose made you more effective when involved in service projects? And the reading out of When I Got Busy, I Got Better, a little excerpt of that said, I've learn to work more effectively on projects with others with whom I have differences by looking for common interests and working to achieve common goals. Now, I love that everything outside of our common purpose of helping families of alcoholics is an outside issue. I don't care what political affiliation you are. I don't care if you're a member of a religious affiliation or have no affiliation. All I care about is our common purpose. When we on the convention committee, you know, how do we do the decorations? That's all we need to focus on. We're going to host the AWSC, the Area World Service Committee meeting. Who needs to do what to make that happen? You know, service projects are just more effective when the focus remains on our common goal, mutual respect and mutual trust are practiced. But I can't make other people do that. I'm only responsible for my part. So I have to remember, it's been told to me, I can be a good example or I can be a good, bad example. What do I want to be? So I'll leave it at that. The second question was, how has this simple, clear, and positive purpose stated in the reading about Tradition 5 helped you share your recovery with others in meetings with newcomers through service? Well, today I love simple, clear, and positive. You know, I was told early on to keep it simple, sweetheart. So I was always complicating things. But by going to meetings, I've heard your experience, strength, and hope. And eventually I gained my own experience, strength, and hope. It comes with being honest, open-minded, and willing. You know, the HOW or the how and how Al-Anon works. I needed to be open to the wisdom of the Serenity Prayer, to use the slogans, to get us, ask someone to be my sponsor, to work the steps, to share in meetings, and to be of service. You know, those are my successes, the Serenity Prayer, the slogans, a sponsor, steps, sharing, and service. My very first service job came from attending my first meeting, and I didn't even realize I was being of service. When I agreed to call people to remind them that they had signed up to bring something to the hospitality room at the area convention that was being held the next weekend. It was my very first meeting. During announcements, someone asked for help. And when the envelope came around with people's names and numbers on slips of paper, the long timer sitting next to me poked me with her elbow and said, "Take one, honey, it'll be good for you." Wow. Service was just that easy. Pick up the phone and call a few people and tell them, I didn't know what a hospitality room was. I didn't know what a convention was, but here I was calling people and reminding them to bring something. So anyways, I've since been asked to do things like set up chairs, put out the literature, hold the key to open the meeting, lead a meeting, be the treasurer, be the group rep. I've also been introduced to service at the district level, the AIS level, the area level, and the WSO level. And I like to say, as I move down the upside down pyramid of service, it keeps taking me back to the three legacies. My most rewarding service position I've had is that of a sponsor. I've been both a personal sponsor, a service sponsor, and an Alateen sponsor. And each time I get to work through the steps, the traditions, and the concepts all over again. The saying, "More will be revealed," comes to mind, as I'm always hearing new perspectives or seeing something in a new light when I'm working with others, and especially from the Alateens. They have a special place in my heart. I'm grateful to have been an Alateen sponsor very early in my program. I feel that I grew emotionally right alongside of them because I was 15 going on 16 when I met the alcoholic that I eventually married at age 19. And today I like to practice, as it says in Reaching for Personal Freedom on page 98, it says treating myself with the same compassion and kindness that I give to those I sponsor. I'm so grateful for those who came before me and walked with me through our legacies. And the third question I was asked to reflect on was, how has the spiritual aspect of Al-Anon factored into your recovery and your participation? Well, I like to quote Lois because she said it's all spiritual. I've also heard the quote, "Money is your messenger in places you cannot be." I mean, to me, that's spirituality in action through my monetary contributions. Can't do it all, but I can provide some funds so others can do it. The use of my talents in helping others is a spiritual experience for me. My recovery grows every time a new opportunity of service comes along. I'm reminded of the three A's. I need awareness, acceptance, and action. And along with a positive attitude, which I refer to as the fourth A, I become aware of my part, accept that others will do their part, and I can then take the right actions to fulfill my part. In my part only. You know, concept four says participation is the key to harmony. However, I've learned that I need to be asked to participate first. Otherwise, harmony may not be found. Because before Al-Anon, I participated in lots of situations because I thought I was going to bring harmony, but I had not been asked to participate in that particular situation. So my ego can get in the way sometimes, and I have to remember my higher power is in charge. You know, there is a God and I'm not it. So I also have the right to be heard. I just don't have the right to be right, which is concept five. So when I practice mutual respect and mutual trust and humility, I can fulfill my commitment with grace and love. So today, life is a spiritual experience for me. And the last question, question four, I was asked to reflect on is, in what situations might you forget to bring the tools of recovery with you? Well, for me, whenever my ego gets in the way, my recovery goes out the window. You know, this manifests itself when I think I'm right or I think I know what's best for others. You know, I'm human, so today I strive for excellence, not perfection. You know, if I start my day out with prayer and meditation along with the daily reading, I can keep my ego at bay most of the time. I've been told I can start my day over at any time, so if I feel serenity slipping away, I can excuse myself, go to another room. You guys all know which is the favorite room to go, the one that you can lock yourself into, or go on a walk, or reach out to my higher power and recenter myself. You know, the days of living with a practicing alcoholic are gone, but the effects of the disease are still circling the runway for me. I have plenty of family members that qualify for this program or for our other program of, you know, our program that we cooperate with, AA. So I have to continue to work my program or risk falling back into old behaviors. I've also been told to be gentle with myself. I was just reminded of that in the daily reading, encouraged to change on May 30th. You know, being gentle with myself was something I had to learn to do. I just lost my brother to this disease less than 3 weeks ago. Last Saturday, my home group was studying Tradition 5 out of the Forum magazine, and it was focusing on the part, the quote, encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives. It said something like, quote, I have to understand my own past behaviors and forgive myself for the guilt, anger, self-righteousness, and my other character defects. In doing so, I'm freeing myself up, understanding and loving myself more. And the other quote went on to say, Tradition 5 is a lesson in compassion for ourselves and our family members. Wow, that was just what I needed to hear. I'd been beating myself up for the last encounter with my brother, where he had been annoying instead of helpful at my father's house. We had sent him home as he was really not being much help at all. And that was the last time we saw him. 10 days later, he was gone. So today, as we await the autopsy report, I truly believe he died of an accidental overdose of prescribed medication along with some alcohol. But more will be revealed. In the meantime, I'm practicing being gentle with myself. I'm also reviewing the use of caller ID, as I and other family members had sent his calls to voicemail over the years. You know, he was the black sheep of the family, the one with the drug and alcohol problem. Sometimes as a means of taking care of ourselves, and other times for me at least, because I was angry at the disease of alcoholism. I'm learning to let go of the guilt, anger, and self-righteousness and have compassion for myself by allowing the grace of my higher power in as I work the steps again, encourage my alcoholic relatives, and understand that this is a disease, and by welcoming and giving comfort to other family members of alcoholics. I've heard it said, it takes a village. So I invite you to meditate on what your next service position might be, or to become willing to step into service to grow your recovery, because that's what this workshop's all about, turbocharging your recovery. My favorite reading is on January 28th in Hope for Today. And it says partly, quote, I do what is in my power to do. I'm given the opportunity, desire, ability, and time to do whatever God assigns me one day at a time. You know, I like the definition of ODAT, opportunity, desire, ability, and time. I truly believe that my higher power does not give me more than I can handle and walks with me through both good times and the not so good times. I'm currently concerned over the lack of volunteers at all levels of service, but I can only say that I have found a wealth of friends, you know, in this program, my Al-Anon family, my family of choice, through being willing to be of service. And my life has been full of love and gratitude. I hope you're willing to let your family circle grow too. I'm grateful for all of you being part of my village. And as a friend I have in program shares, if no one has told you that they love you today, let me be the first. Love you all. Thanks for letting me share.
Wow. Thank you, Cindy. Really appreciate it. That was very touching. Our third speaker tonight is Mary Jane. Mary Jane is a neighbor. We see each other walking around the neighborhood lots of times. And Mary Jane has a program that I am quite envious of. And she has lots of good stuff in Al-Anon that I like to listen to. So Mary Jane, I am looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Mike. And I want to thank everyone involved in the committee for all the work to put this workshop together. It's been really, really a great experience for me. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. And then also, too, I want to welcome any newcomers that might be listening in. Also, because I'm an old timer, and I've drifted away and drifted back, I want to welcome anybody who's been in drifting, because that many times I felt like a newcomer because of that. And for those who actually left the program and came back again, welcome to them, those people too. So I came into this program, I don't really know for sure what year. I was pretty unconscious when I came in, but I think it was, I don't know, 86. And, you know, for me, time in the program is not all that important, because I went like 10 steps forward and 8 steps backwards, and you know, it took me a long time to get there. After about 10 years of being in the program, and I came in through the adult children meetings, and that was a higher power thing. I had never heard of it. I didn't even know anything about it, and I didn't even know I was raised in a family full of alcoholics, because I was so unconscious to what was going on. So when I went to this adult child meeting, this, I can't even remember where it was, but it was quite a while ago. It was on Broadway somewhere. But anyway, I heard my story in the first meeting, and I was shocked that there was other people that felt like I did. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. So anyway, I hung around the perimeters of the program for 10 years. And then my sponsor, I found a sponsor. She spoke at, I think it was a Christmas Alcathon. And she really had what I wanted to have. We started working the steps and the traditions and doing book studies and, you know, stuff like that. And So I was quite late coming to the traditions and the steps and then the traditions. And I'm just now, I know some of the concepts, but I'm now getting involved, you know, in with them at a deeper level. So when I saw the title of the workshop and I saw new perspectives on reaching out, and I went, oh crap, I need to reach out to somebody. You know, because the last thing I want to do is pick up the phone and call somebody, you know. So I called an Al-Anon friend. And I said, well, I'm practicing reaching out so I can say I've reached out, you know. So that's the honest truth of that. But after I looked at the tradition and everything, well, I wanted to say one little story about when I first came into Al-Anon, and it may have been my first or second meeting, but there was a woman there, and she was just a beautiful person inside and outside. And she welcomed me and she reached out to me. Otherwise I would have been out that door probably in about 5 minutes, and she welcomed me and she talked to me she became my friend for the next 30 something years. And she passed away last year, and her name was Ann. I'm sorry, I'm nervous and it just went out of my head. Nancy O is her name, and was her name. And anyway, she was a beautiful person and a good friend and a longtime Al-Anon member. So anyway, I got to thinking about perspective and new perspectives and all those things. And I didn't really answer those questions. So I heard the other speakers addressing them. I thought, oh, crap, I didn't do my homework. But anyway, I'll just do the best I can. When I was thinking about that tradition and a new perspective, what happened for me was actually a new perspective. Because I was looking at the tradition and I've studied it before, Tradition 5. And I thought, well, heaven's sakes, this tradition tells you exactly what to do. You know what I mean? It tells you how to, first of all, it tells me I have my home group, which is, by the way, is Saturday, Clear There, Al-Anon Adult Children. I've been involved with that meeting probably 30 years. But I realized that my home group is not just about me going there and listening, and maybe if I have a problem, I tell what my problem is, and I hope somebody will give me a really good solution to that. I really realize that it's about taking it as a group of people beyond that point to other people and opening up our arms to them, you know, and being welcoming to them and encouraging them to do whatever they think they can do at that point in their life. You know what I mean? And I really feel this tradition the most when I sponsor. There was a time I sponsored way too many people. I won't tell you how many because I think they've done skits about people who sponsor lots of people. But anyway, I was one of those people. I just lots of things were going on. You needed me, that means you love me, and I just loved that. And then I did want to give back too. There was part of that going on. But anyway, that's where I feel this tradition comes alive for me is in sponsoring. So when I got into working the steps and started doing service work, my character shortcomings just blossomed. They just blew up. and I still can every once in a while. Am I not perfect? And so, for a long time I resisted, trying to apply the steps to it and traditions to it, but I wasn't getting better. And so, and it reminds me of that book, When I Got Busy, I Got Better. I've had that on my bookshelf for 10 years at least. And I decided, it's just such a little book. It can't have a whole lot in it, but it really is just a great little book. I highly recommend it. So anyway, back to, working with others and having my character shortcomings come up. They really, really came up big time. And I worked with my sponsor at that time with it. And I have another different sponsor now. We work it a lot. And the really good news for me with these steps and traditions and the concepts is that occasionally now I can almost see my character shortcoming coming before it gets here. And that I could never see that before. You know what I mean? This would be out of my mouth and then I'd be regretting it. And I'm thinking, oh, well, I'm glad I got a program. I can at least, work it through the steps and make amends and so forth. So thank God for the steps and then the traditions. I'm learning better because when I did service, I don't do as much as I used to, but I worked in the local AIS office for probably about 10 years, selling literature and stuff like that. And I was just the queen of that office, man. I tell you what, there wasn't a job in there I didn't know. And so, tradition that talks about domination. I was very domineering. And when I went into that, I was the treasurer. I emptied the safe. I ordered the literature. One time I was doing both those things together because nobody would stand up. And well, I was great. It kept me busy, not realizing that was not a well thing to do. So I'm sorry I'm all over the place with this, but that's how I learned. I pretty much learned the hard way, how to do the to apply the steps to it and so forth. When I went into the office, only probably people who have been around in Tucson a long time remember Patty, but Patty's the one who trained me, and she was a little curmudgeon-y, and this is years ago, so this is, I don't know, gosh, probably 20 years ago, and she brought me into the office, and she showed me the files, and she said, well, this is your office, these are your files, and you can go through them and find out what's in there. You know, that was pretty much that. She showed me different numbers were and everything. We didn't have procedures then. We didn't have job descriptions, which are wonderful. They're really great. They're really helpful. So she was quite a salty character, and I appreciate her. I really liked her. She was such a straight talker. I really liked that. So anyway, and I've been the AIS treasurer, and I loved that job. But then they went on doing it in a bookkeeping way, and not so much. But that it was not time for me to do it anyway. So I'd already done 3 years of it. But so I have not served past the district level, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't done that because I'm not so sure I have any talent in that area. And I think that one thing about new perspectives on reaching out is that through the steps, I needed to find out who I am. And I continue to do that. And one of the things I can do, and some of the things I am really horrible at doing, you know, and I'm better off not inflicting that on other people. So I haven't gone beyond that. I'm not saying I won't ever do that, but it's too close to me to what work was like. And that's just my stuff, and you know, and I'm working on that. But I do like working. I have worked on the conventions with my former sponsor. I don't know how much help I was, but I have learned, hopefully through these traditions and so forth, to, you know, to be a better source of help, and to leave my emotional self out of it, you know, and just try to look at the big picture. So I just wanted to talk about talking about the simplicity of Tradition 5 and my group. You know, it dawned on me that when I arrive at my group 1 minute before we start, that I'm not being available to somebody who might need help. You know, I'm not doing that. And I just haven't been thinking about that. I sort of fell into this bad habit of doing that. And then, so I started coming to the group. I probably do it like 8 or 9 minutes ahead of time. And I find that newcomers, that's when they show up, is a little bit early. So that's one of the things that I have changed my perspective on. My home group had, a challenge with us getting the Zoom room open on time. And we took that and used this tradition, and we talked about it in a business meeting. And we talked about how having that room open is like having a room open, you know, in the real world, you know, and being there, someone comes to the door and there's someone there. So that was pretty effective, and we're doing better now after we had that business meeting. I love business meetings. You know, I really do. I know hardly anyone loves them, but I love them. And I've learned to not take it personally when I don't get my way in the meetings, you know, and to not take it personally that I didn't get, my idea didn't get, okay, thanks, Mike, didn't get passed. So that's how I've learned how democracy works and how messy it is. When I've gone to the assembly, and for all those that have gone to the 2-day election assembly, oh my God, you know, I don't know if you're at least at all introspective, you will run away screaming because you've been around people for so long. But it was, you know, but it was wonderful. It was really wonderful. And it was a great process. And I've seen people, I don't know how they do it, but I've seen people hold big crowds together and move the agenda along and all those things. So anyway, since it's about time for me to close, and I'm sorry I didn't answer really any of these questions. I considered them, but you know, I can say this about how has the spiritual aspect of Al-Anon factored into my recovery and my participation. I couldn't participate without my higher power. I can't do it. My mouth, I just can't. I get too nervous. I just won't do it, you know? So that's a close connection with my higher power is what gets me through whatever. So there's that. And the situations that I might forget to bring tools of recovery with me are when I'm trying to get you to like me, to when I'm trying to impress you, when I've lost focus of what we're there for, which is for families and friends of alcoholics. That's why my meeting exists. And that there's a great deal of love in that. And I'd like to close with, I found this reading in How Al-Anon Works. I love that book. I've been through that book, I don't know, several times. And so I'd like to just read this to you because it's my idea of why I go and what love is all about. So it's on page 114 and it is, quote, "There may be no better reminder of what we are attempting to achieve in Al-Anon than the painful struggle of someone who needs help with an alcoholic situation. Al-Anon exists for the sole purpose of helping such families and friends of alcoholics. Our groups carry out this purpose by welcoming newcomers and by giving love, comfort, and support to anyone who seeks it. We try to appreciate what a privilege it is to contribute to a fellow member's freedom from the desperation and despair that accompany alcoholism. When one of us is healed, we all heal a little." And I really, truly believe that in my heart. So thanks for having me, and thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Mary Jane. Thank you so much. Those were all great talks today. Let's give all of our speakers a great big thank you with the American Jazz sign sign language clap. Okay, I think I can say that. And we really appreciate your experience, strength, and hope, all three of you, that you've given us tonight. So now I'm going to turn it over to our moderator, Ricky, who I think has gotten some questions from folks that we'll ask our speakers. Ricky?
Yes. Hi, everybody. I'm back. And boy, I got speakers and I learned how to pop out the chat so they're bigger. There were so many good questions. The first one for Winnie. What did you mean by service needs to come from the overflow?
More or less, for me, it's about the heart. So if my heart meter of love and emotional needs, if that is plummeted, if it is empty, it's almost like a gas tank. So when I say it comes from overflow, it's my heart has so much richness and fullness that it overflows. That love of service or that love of my fellows, it overflows, and it's naturally going to overflow into all of what I do. But if I'm coming from a place of depletion, I'm going to be an ornery cuss, and it's not going to go well.
Okay. Thank you. I understand that now. Let's see here for Cindy. How do you move from perfectionism to excellence with detachment from the ego and the disease?
Wow, that's a great question.
Well, I'm reading it. Somebody read that. I didn't.
Do me a favor and read it one more time, please.
Okay. How do you move from perfectionism to excellence with detachment from the ego and the disease? So you're moving from perfectionism to excellence with detachment.
Well, I don't ever think that I can attain perfectionism as much as I've tried. And to get out of my ego, I simply have to invite God in, you know, because ego stands for edging God out. So if I invite God in, then, you know, all things are possible with my higher power. I have a standard I have a little standard thing that I do I invite God in by breathing and asking God for the right words and the right actions. I'll leave it, go with that since we're trying to keep it short.
Okay. Okay, wait a minute. I had one here from Mary Jane and I thought, I wrote it down. How has service played a part in the drifting in and out of the program? Can you do the drifting without beating yourself up?
That's a great question. And, thank you. Thank you for the question. I used to not be able to drift in and out without beating myself up because I thought I had to be the perfect Al-Anon person. And it took a long time for me to understand that I was never going to be perfect and that, I was so isolated in an alcoholic home. So I didn't know how to connect because of that. And so I didn't know how to connect to Al-Anon either. I always kept my distance from people and the meetings. So it's taken a long time, taking risk, that kind of thing. I've spoken a couple other times. It's not my favorite thing to do, honestly. But it got me into the tradition. Let me tell you, I read everything I could about it, and that was great. So anyway, now I just, I talk to my higher power. I open my heart and listen to my higher power. I have a picture of my little self at a year old in front of me on my desk to remind me that, I'm enough. And that's very helpful to me. And that as long as I do my best, that's good enough. So thanks.
Thank you. Winnie? You transitioned from Alateen to Al-Anon. How did that affect, your service? I mean, did it help? Did it hamper? How was the transitioning? How were you accepted in the transitioning? That sort of whole question.
For me, I wanted Al-Anon. It wasn't a matter of, was I going to do it? It was when was I going to do it? And I wanted it. I had often liked being around people that had more experience than me because it meant that I would avoid a lot of other mistakes and blunders. I have older siblings. I have had other forms of mentorship. So the transition itself was not hard. It was really, what I have a harder time is letting things go. I know I wanted to get out of Alateen. I just didn't know how to do it gracefully. Alateen sponsors helped with that, which is great. Like, hey, you kind of are too old. You might want to just keep going here. It's like, oh, cool. There's permission to do that. Great. But there's a second part to that question. And it was about service. Can you repeat that part of the question?
Transitioning help or hinder your service?
Okay. So I can answer that component.
Yeah.
Most of the Alateen sponsors had other forms of service. And funny enough, the decorations chairperson was an Alateen sponsor, and she got me when I was 18. Another sponsor was hospitality committee a different year. Another sponsor was involved in AIS. Another sponsor. So I knew a lot of the Alateen sponsors that were also at the Al-Anon meetings, and they knew I was around and I was willing. And that helped me tremendously because then I didn't have to be around my Al-Anonic parent.
For anyone now here, how Al-Anon works. The point is not what others can do to improve, but what we can do to improve. What is the biggest improvement in your life you received from doing service? And I'll start that one with Cindy.
Okay. The biggest thing for me, from doing service, I'd say is just realizing that I'm not alone, that I don't have to do everything by myself. That I belong, that nobody's going to fire me if I don't do something perfectly. I've just felt more in the fold, so to speak, people have loved me and taken me under their wings and made me feel a part of. So that's what I've gotten out of being of service. Thanks.
I've got a question here that's for everybody, since this is a service seminar. And I'll start at the top. Winnie, how do you get more people involved in service in your district or area?
That's a great question. Really, when I was AIS co-chair and we needed people at large to be on the steering committee, I just had to go up and ask people. And that personal touch tends to go far, asking for help. So asking people to take things back to their groups, and if there is a need, stressing that, hey, there is a need, not just, oh yeah, this thing's happening, but they're looking for people. If you have an inclination, please contact this person. Spreading the word, but making sure there's a sense of urgency. Like, we're not asking willy-nilly, we do need help. So that's kind of, I'm being personal about it. It's like, hey, I know you. You seem like you'd be great for this. Would you consider it?
Thank you. And Cindy, how do you get people involved in service?
Everything that Winnie just said. plus I like to make it fun. I have a motto that says, if it's not fun, I don't want to do it. And the definition of service is putting love into action. So to me, that makes it fun. So whenever there's a fun element.
Mary Jane, have you got anything to add?
Well, those ideas are great. The only thing I can think of that I've done in the past when we've had elections for AIS is offer to be a service sponsor if I have experience there. So they know that they're not going to be alone in having to carry out that particular job duty. So, yeah.
Okay. The one other thing that I kind of would put in there is tell the person how well you think they would do that job, you know, and so a little praise before they even start the job might not hurt. Okay, another one for everybody. This one's very general, so it's a good one. I'll go around the room again. Winnie, what do you do when you are angry? What helps you to not overreact?
That's a great question, since I do have history of anger problems. Funny enough, step 11 has been huge for me for that, where, and it doesn't have to be a formal like 20 minute meditation chair thing, but it can be as simple as, God, I need you to help me right now. What knowledge of your will for me and the power to not punch them in the face, you know, like stuff like that. Breathing, being cognizant of my breathing and remembering that, hey, I don't know their walk. I don't know their shoes. I need to have compassion. And this program teaches me compassion, but most of the time God stops me from doing something stupid. I machinate about it later, but God just kind of does the amnesia thing for me in the moment, which is great. But I think that's from continuous practice of 1, 2, 3, and 11. That's kind of been my main help.
Okay, Cindy?
Well, anger too was the reason I came in very angry. And what I was told is if you come in angry, you're eventually gonna have to deal with your fear. If you come in fearful, you're eventually gonna have to deal with your anger. But the very first meeting I ever attended, the subject was anger, and a woman shared about throwing ice cubes at the block wall. No mess, no cleanup. And I've used that several times with my kids and my grandkids. But for me, it's about responding versus reacting. I have to breathe God in, and I need to ask for the right words and the right actions.
Okay, Mary Jane.
You know, I don't usually get too angry. And when I do, what I usually do is later on, well, first I ask God for help to not do any harm. And then what I'll do is I run it by on a fourth and a fifth step. Because for me, usually if I'm really have a strong reaction to something, it means that something else is going on. it's usually not about what's happening right at the moment. And so this is another way for me to find out what I need to know about me. And so anymore, when I have something happen like that, I thank my higher power for it, because, you know, at least now I know what's going on, and before I didn't know. So that's what I do.
Okay, I just got another question for you, Mary Jane. You said that sometimes you can see your shortcomings coming before you open your mouth. Are there any tips, tricks you use to keep from giving your opinion, interfering, or butting in?
Don't open your mouth. You know, no, seriously, when I feel a strong urge to talk is probably when I should not talk. Because I'm usually for me, it's born out of fear. Fear I'm going to lose something, fear things aren't going to go the way I want them to, and it's born out of a need to manipulate so I feel safe. And so now I'm just trying to sit with it. And then if I still need to say something and there's time later, then maybe I can do it then with God's help, you know, and giving me the words to say without so much charged emotion attached to it. So.
Thank you. Okay, Winnie, how has service, the tools, and the service helped be less vulnerable to the trigger buttons?
Probably because they get pushed all the time. They lose their edge. because I would say that I've had to learn tolerance, because there's plenty of other opinions out there, and mine's not the only one that's right. There's a lot of different ways to approach things. There's a lot of different abilities, and I don't have talents in certain areas that other people do, but I've had to appreciate that because my talents aren't the best talents. So I'm not sure if this has happened to anybody else, but on a calculator, if you punch the buttons too hard, eventually they either get stuck or they don't work anymore. And that's kind of what I think about with service, is eventually the button's out of commission. It's just out. And that's great, because that means I'm not going to get reactional. I can be responsive. As Cindy mentioned earlier, I get to learn that. And service is a great training ground for that, because I have that undertone of people aren't doing it to be malicious. People are just being people. And if that's the tone, because there's a common purpose set up, that's great. And then once I get that clarity, I can usually apply that to, oh, people at work are trying to be jerks. They're just being people. Can I be just as compassionate as I can to my Al-Anon family? Sure, yeah, probably.
Okay, Cindy, how has service helped you weave the 12 steps into the fabric of your life?
Wow, my life is the 12 steps, basically. You know, 1, 2, 3, and 11 get me started for the day. You know, 10 at night before I go to bed. 4 through 9 on a regular basis helps me really, you know. So I don't know. I don't know how to answer that other than the 12 steps. I don't know if some of you know Claudia's little 12 steps in 15 minutes, but that little exercise is very worthy of, you know, taking a specific incident and looking at the 12 steps for whatever it is that is bothering you at the time. So after a while, the 12 steps just are part of your everyday living. That's all I can say. Thanks.
I've got one question here that actually I've had other times when I've been moderator. So I'm going to give this to everybody. I can't, this is what I'm reading. I can't really take on a big service role right now because of other things in my life. So how can I, as an individual, incorporate service into my recovery? And we'll start with Winnie, number one.
Service doesn't have to be huge. Service, for me, I've learned, because I'm actually in a very similar boat. There's reasons why I'm not doing certain forms of service right now. But I get to show up for what I can show up for. So sometimes a group needs a representative. What does that actually tell? According to the service manual, I participate in 3 things in a year. That's it. Can I do that? Probably. Other forms of service include being willing to read during a format. So sometimes a person needs to read the steps or the preamble. That's a service commitment for that one meeting. That is a form of service. Sometimes there's a timer that's needed. Being willing to contribute to Seventh Tradition is a form of service that can be as reasonable as is for an individual budget. There's, when we think of service, it's not just, you know, the macro level of, you know, WSO, AIS, and area. It's really the majority of service really boils down to the group. And then once people are okay with that, then they can expand their circle. But the service manual is probably a great way to consult all the different forms of service, from reasonable, from one meeting to meeting, and then beyond that.
Okay, Cindy?
Yeah, so just like when he said, service is, all you guys are being here today, you're being of service by being present. Being present in a meeting and sharing your experience, strength, and hope is being of service. You know, helping to lead a meeting, reading part of the opening, whatever, or the closing, that's all being of service. So service, like it's been said, doesn't have to be big. And I've had different times in my life where, you know, my mom was sick and I was going flying up to Oregon every other month and I couldn't do very much, but I picked one thing and I picked the simplest thing that for me, that it happened to be I was an at-large member on the executive committee for real property management for the WSO. They get together twice a year and the meetings last about two and a half hours. You know, twice a year, 2.5 hours a meeting. That was something I felt I could handle at the time. Plus, I got to get on an airplane and go to Virginia Beach and look at our beautiful home called the World Service Office and inspect it and make sure it was structurally sound, and then have a meeting about finances, which is up my alley. So it was something that was my talent was easy to do for that. Other times it's just been taking the key for the meeting or saying I'll be the literature person or one small thing. It just something that doesn't take a lot of my time and it helps get me back to the meeting. What I found early on is just taking a service commitment kept me coming back, and that's what I needed in the beginning. So that's what I have to share. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to throw a different question at Mary Jane. Give some examples of when feelings of obligation, coercion, and hesitation have made you say yes or no to participation in Al-Anon service.
So what were the three factors?
Obligation, coercion, and hesitation.
Oh, coercion, okay.
Coercion.
And what was that third thing?
Well, it says hesitation. We could say, let's see. Oh, okay. When feelings of obligation, coercion, and hesitation have made you say yes or no?
Well, this is, want me to answer this question or not? Doing service for me is a matter of balance. And, you know, I didn't retire to dedicate my whole life to Al-Anon service. Being honest to you, I make time. I'm trying to make time to pursue some things I like to do. So there has to be balance. I haven't been ever coerced into anything, but I have been had manipulated into doing service. I have. I don't like that technique. I don't use that technique. That's all I can say about that. You know what I mean? I feel like there are higher powers out there and in here, and if a service job needs to get filled, and someone will come along and take care of that. So I also think that doesn't have any part in my life working like that, you know. And I have been a person who has changed their mind. I volunteered for something and then I unvolunteered myself. And I don't think people were very happy about it, but I just, I did that. And I thought I had the right to do that. I don't do that very often. I try to think it through first so I don't end up doing something like that. But that's all I'll say about that.
well, we're just about out of time. And I want to stress that it was, the question said, give some examples when feelings of obligations, coercion, and hesitation. So it's not necessarily that you were being manipulated, but you felt like you were being manipulated is sort of really what the, I think is what the person meant with this question, because they did say feelings of, but didn't want to put you on the spot too much on that one. Well, it's almost time. Would Cindy or Winnie want to answer that one? What do you, give some examples of when feelings of obligation, coercion, and hesitation have made you say yes or no to participation in service?
I usually say no to that because I like keeping my side of the street clean. And if any of those can lead me towards a resentment, and I don't want to do an eighth and ninth about it, period.
Cindy, yes, I'll just add that, you know, I have to pray about it, sleep on it. I can't just react. Just recently, I was asked to do something, take on one more commitment, and I had to pray on it, sleep on it, talk, you know, sometimes it's talk to your sponsor, write about it, whatever it needs to be to figure out the balance. Because as I think Mary Jane or Winnie both said, balance is key. I too am not here to give my whole life to Al-Anon, even though I give a lot of my life to Al-Anon. I still have time for me. I still have time for my family, my grandkids, to ride my bike, to go on cruises as soon as they let me, you know, whatever it takes. So balance is key.
Well, there were a lot of great questions tonight. I don't know if I got them all, but I tried. And some, I think that some of the answers were really even good too. So, you know, anyway, we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to turn the meeting back over to our chairperson, Mike.
Thank you, Ricky, for being the moderator tonight. Let's thank all of our speakers again with the American Sign Language Jazz Hands for all that great experience, strength, and hope. Love all three of you. It's really special to have all three of you in my life. That's for sure. Also, I want to thank Ricky for being our moderator, Flo Ann for being our tech person, Maureen for being our tech backup person, and thank all the other members of the committee who were on tonight, the workshop committee that have helped put this together, and the Arizona area for helping to support us in our efforts. I just want to let you know that we will have three more speakers on this same topic on Saturday, June the 19th at 10 a.m. Arizona time. So let's close with the Al-Anon Declaration. Let it begin with me. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help,
let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Anon
always be there.
And let it begin with me.
Let it begin with me.